May the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart, be acceptable unto you, O Lord, my God, my rock and my redeemer. Amen. You may be seated. Now, I know it's going to disappoint some of you, but I'm not going to be talking about the end of the world in the gospel passage today. We'll let Jesus' words be enough for us on that one. Instead, I'm going to be focusing on the second lesson, Paul's advice to this poor church of the Thessalonians. We know that they were not very well off, that many of them were in need themselves. But that's where we're going to focus. It's interesting because recently I felt something about this, which was a pull in an opposite direction from what we're going to talk about. But my school has annually what we call our high school symposium. It's one of the reasons I actually got into teaching, was because it's a time where we step away from this dehumanizing, mandated testing stuff that we have to prepare for, and actually educate kids, like the way it should happen, with a focus just on education for education's sake. I really love it. We have give our 9th through 12th graders a single book that all of the high school read together. We have lectures. We have seminars together. We sit and we discuss in small groups, and it's just a wonderful opportunity. It keeps me loving my job that we can still do this. Now, the last symposium we had was on Joseph Pieper's book. For those of you who don't know Joseph Pieper, he's a wonderful Catholic philosopher who's kind of revived the intellectual tradition, or did, he's passed, but in the early 20th century, the Aquinas tradition and things like that. It's a wonderful, wonderful writer and philosopher. His book is called Leisure, The Basis of Culture, which, of course, all the high schoolers loved the title, and then they had to work at reading it, ironically. But Pieper has a wonderful, wonderful proposition in this, that leisure is the privilege and responsibility of every person in society so that they might rise above the dangers of pragmatism and have a greater appreciation of the beauty of creation, the love of neighbor, and grace that comes through productive rest. Now, I mentioned Pieper and leisure and my admiration of his well-thought-out, well-used leisure life, because we have a passage in today's reading that is apparently opposite to that. It is a massively abused passage by our current culture and the way we, I'm sorry, but especially as Americans, approach this idea of leisure as a waste of time, which it should not be considered. It is this passage in question. The passage in question is from Thessalonians. Anyone unwilling to work should not eat. It sounds harsh. And you've heard it before. We all have. It usually goes something like this. I work hard for my money. Why should I have to give away to those lazy people? After all, he who will not work should not eat. Oh yeah, we hear it all the time from people we know. I heard it, and I think many of you probably did, when we're passing by some panhandlers, our parents lean over to us and say, don't give money to them. If they don't work, shouldn't eat. Right? There are so-called wealth advisors who would say, you worked hard for your money, you earned it, and don't give it away. Keep that money for later on because, you know, those who work should eat. We also hear from politicians who excuse why we shouldn't have social safety nets or maybe why we should have work requirements for anyone who needs such social welfare programs, including disabled and children. So it's especially important to us as Americans to recognize that we use this verse a lot culturally. It goes back to some of the early days of colonial America as well. You know the story of John Smith telling all the gold hunters in Jamestown, hey, stop going hunting for gold and wasting time. If you're not contributing to the community, you're going to starve. Anyone who's unwilling to work will not eat, he quoted. We also can't forget the Puritan work ethic, which was brought over here to the Plymouth colony, the Puritan work ethic was, hey, anybody who's not contributing to the society is obviously going to be sent out into the woods to die on their own. Because, after all, the only way for success is hard work so you can get ahead. Of course, we sometimes neglect that the origin of that Puritan work ethic was actually the commerce that the Puritans were involved in, not necessarily biblical principles. We also know this because one of the biggest proponents of that Puritan work ethic, of that he who shall not work shall not eat, was John Dewey, the American philosopher and education reformer, and the same guy with the library numbers, who was the one who said in his pragmatic philosophy that American society should be built not on love of beauty and things like that, no, but on skills and hard work and laborers who can contribute to the economy. I mean, his philosophy also was eugenicist, but the idea that if you can't work, you probably should starve to death. That is what has affected a lot of our readings of this, in especially our current culture. So that even American Christians, well, Christians around the world who've been affected by this, justify their own greed by using this passage from Thessalonians to excuse giving to the poor and the needy, because we claim some sort of biblical authority. Hey, listen to Paul. Paul wrote the Bible, you know that. And he said, you don't work, you don't eat. Don't try to take my money. We use it. We connect the idea of anyone wanting our money that we earned hard and isn't earning it for themselves as sin. We attach sin to poverty. This has been something we've been doing since the Enlightenment, since the Industrial Revolution. We attach sin to poverty. And especially, you know, that the seven deadly sins, right? You know the seven deadly sins. I think I have a slide there of the seven deadly sins. That should be the next one. Yeah, there they are. Greed, gluttony, lust, wrath, sloth, envy, pride. Oh yeah, sloth. We like to talk about how those people who want our money without working for themselves, they're guilty of that. That sloth, right? It has been such a common practice since the Enlightenment and Industrial Revolution for us to vilify the poor in this way and make ourselves feel better about not giving to charity that we've even taken these seven deadly sins and instead of thinking, oh, what should I be careful of? We say, oh yeah, those people, clearly of the lower classes. I mean, sloth? That's just evidenced by their poverty, right? Envy? Of course the poor are envious of us. Gluttony? Well, you wouldn't be so poor if you didn't buy all your food at McDonald's all the time. Greed? Oh yeah, those greedy poor people are always asking me for money. Have you heard these things? Have we said these things? There's a conviction. A conviction of two major societal sins that unfortunately many of us have been guilty of. Those are the sins of classism and aporophobia. I know that's a big word right there, aporophobia. It's a fear and just general dislike or distrust of the poor. And it has arisen and grown and grown and grown since folks have used this verse, this passage, to attach sin to someone's need. But we should not be doing this. We should not, as many in authority with status, wealth, and power have been doing, bash the poor using this passage and excusing our own unholy state. And in fact, in order to give this interpretation, we need to kind of ignore a few things. Like noticing greed is on the list of seven deadly sins. And maybe the love of money is related to that. As Paul says, don't desire to be rich. So maybe it's not this connection to the poor that we should be doing with this list of seven deadly sins. Also, you know, Jesus explicitly tells us that we need to be giving to the poor, as do most of the biblical authors. It's kind of hard to get through the Bible without being told you should be giving to the poor. Charity, without qualification. So how can this passage not be used? Obviously, no work, don't eat. What's the deal? What are we missing here? Well, I want you to notice a couple of things the passage does not say. It actually does not say anyone unable to work should not eat. All right? I think we all agree when we recognize that, the conclusion we're coming to, right? Telling children, the disabled, the elderly, that they need to work if we're going to help them, that is pretty universally understood to be wrong. It would be nearly satanically cruel. Well, maybe something eugenicists might do, to starve those who can't work and are unable. I think we all understand that it is decidedly unchristian to withhold aid from people who are unable to work. At least I hope we all understand that that's decidedly unchristian. But also I want you to notice this passage does not say anyone who does not work should not eat. I mean, that ignores a couple of other passages in the Bible about God wanting us to rest, you know, Sabbath, regularly trust in his provision and the provision of the community. Moses and the ancient Israelites set up systems so that economy, agriculture, and people, even animals, could have leisure time without going hungry. And the early church's practice was to have a pool of money so that there was nobody starving. So, what about this teaching from Paul? Well, a key word on there is that it does say this: anyone unwilling to work should not eat. Unwilling. The medieval philosophers and commentators had a really excellent handle on this. When they took this idea of one who is unwilling to work, is actually, it goes to a heart issue. The heart issue is that they don't care about the community. So one who does not care about the community is someone who doesn't want to do anything for them. We could put Paul's writing into this: anyone who doesn't care enough about contributing to this community should not be entitled to receive the bounty of the community. And then there's the context. Okay, let's look at the context here. What's the example Paul gives? Paul says, as a leader in the community, as a person of status in the community, he refused to take resources out of a sense of entitlement. Rather, as a leader in the community, he did not see the community's resources serving him. He saw himself serving the community. The context of this is not a warning to the lazy poor, but to the entitled people in power. Can we think a little bit more in the context of saying anyone unwilling to work should not eat, as perhaps someone in the upper echelons who says, you exist to serve me? This is not akin to that proverb about the ant and the sluggard, right? Actually, the closest passage related to Paul's warning here is when Jesus instructs his apostles. Let me quote him. You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and great ones are tyrants over them. But it should not be so among you. Instead, anyone who wishes to become great among you must be a servant, and anyone who wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. As Jesus warning to his apostles, Paul warning to the Thessalonians against those who hold power, those who have status in the community, and yet they are unwilling to serve. Rather, they are entitled and uncaring about the people whom they are serving. I point this out because we need to break this tie. We need to break this tie that we have made from this verse to the poor and the needy whom we must give to. Being unwilling to contribute, feeling entitled, caring only for yourself and not for the good of others, these are social sins that, regardless of our class, anyone could be guilty of. The truth is, in our current culture, we really more need the reminder than anything else, especially since the Industrial Revolution and the Enlightenment era. We need the reminder that it's the rich, the powerful, those in authority who can very easily claim their status gives them entitlements to take without really caring. Most of us in the church in America today need to accept this passage applies to us. Not because we need to watch out for the slothful poor who come in our door and say, "Oh, before we give you any charity, what have you done to earn it?" No, that is not the attitude that this is asking us to check ourselves on. It's because we can be tempted to feel entitled by our own, "I worked to get this." We can be tempted to say, "Hey, I'm in the position I'm in because I strove to get here." We can be tempted to have the virtue of our wealth, our status, our education, our position, our power to make us stop caring about the ones who need us